The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 1, The Yoga of Divine Works, Chapter 9, Equality and the Annihilation of Ego, page 221. An entire self-consecration, a complete equality, an unsparing effacement of the ego, a transforming deliverance of the nature from its ignorant modes of action are the steps by which the surrender of all the being and nature to the divine will can be prepared and achieved. A self-giving true, total, and without reserve. The first necessity is an entire spirit of self-consecration in our works. It must become first the constant will, then the ingrained need in all the being. Finally, its automatic but living and conscious habit, the self-existent turn to do all action as a sacrifice to the Supreme and to the veiled power present in us and in all beings and in all the workings of the universe. Life is the altar of this sacrifice. Works are our offering. A transcendent and universal power and presence, as yet rather felt or glimpsed than known or seen by us, is the deity to whom they are offered. This sacrifice, this self-consecration, has two sides to it. There is the work itself, and there is the spirit in which it is done. The spirit of worship to the Master of Works in all that we see, think, and experience. The work itself is at first determined by the best light we can command in our ignorance. It is that which we conceive as the thing that should be done. And whether it be shaped by our sense of duty, by our feeling for our fellow creatures, by our idea of what is for the good of others or the good of the world, or by the direction of one whom we accept as a human master, wiser than ourselves, and for us the representative of that Lord of all works, in whom we believe but whom we do not yet know, the principle is the same. The essential of the sacrifice of works must be there, and the essential is the surrender of all desire for the fruit of our works, the renunciation of all attachment to the result for which yet we labor. For so long as we work with attachment to the result, the sacrifice is offered not to the divine but to our ego. We may think otherwise, but we are deceiving ourselves. We are making our idea of the divine, our sense of duty, our feeling for our fellow creatures, our idea of what is good for the world or others, even our obedience to the Master, a mask for our egoistic satisfactions and preferences, and a specious shield against the demand made on us to root all desire out of our nature. At this stage of the yoga, and even throughout the yoga, this form of desire, this figure of the ego, is the enemy, against whom we have to be always on our guard with an unsleeping vigilance. We need not be discouraged when we find him lurking within us and assuming all sorts of disguises, but we should be vigilant to detect him in all his masks, and inexorable in expelling his influence. The illumining word of this movement is the decisive line of the Gita. To action thou hast a right, but never, under any circumstances, to its fruit. The fruit belongs solely to the Lord of all works. Our only business with it is to prepare success by a true and careful action, and to offer it, if it comes, to the Divine Master. Afterwards, even as we have renounced attachment to the fruit, we must renounce attachment to the work also. At any moment, we must be prepared to change one work, one course, or one field of action for another, or abandon all works, if that is the clear command of the Master. Otherwise, we do the act not for his sake, but for our satisfaction and pleasure in the work, from the kinetic nature's need of action, or for the fulfillment of our propensities. But these are all stations and refuges of the ego. However necessary for our ordinary motion of life, they have to be abandoned in the growth of the spiritual consciousness and replaced by divine counterparts. An ananda, an impersonal and God-directed delight, will cast out or supplant the unillumined vital satisfaction and pleasure, a joyful driving of the divine energy, the kinetic need. The fulfillment of the propensities will no longer be an object or a necessity. There will be, instead, the fulfillment of the divine will through the natural dynamic truth in action of a free soul and a luminous nature. In the end, as the attachment to the fruit of the work and to the work itself has been excised from the heart, so also the last clinging attachment to the idea and sense of ourselves as the doer has to be relinquished. The divine Shakti must be known and felt above and within us as the true and sole worker. The renunciation of attachment to the work and its fruit is the beginning of a wide movement towards an absolute equality in the mind and soul, which must become all-enveloping if we are to be perfect in the spirit. For the worship of the Master of Works demands a clear recognition and glad acknowledgement of him in ourselves, in all things and in all happenings. Equality is the sign of this adoration. It is the soul's ground on which true sacrifice and worship can be done. The Lord is there equally in all beings. We have to make no essential distinctions between ourselves and others, the wise and the ignorant, friend and enemy, man and animal, the saint and the sinner. We must hate none, despise none, be repelled by none. For in all, we have to see the One, disguised or manifested at His pleasure. He is a little revealed in one, or more revealed in another, or concealed and wholly distorted in others, according to His will and His knowledge of what is best for that which He intends to become in form in them, and to do in works in their nature. All is ourself, one self, that has taken many shapes. Hatred and disliking and scorn and repulsion, clinging and attachment and preference are natural, necessary, inevitable at a certain stage. They attend upon or they help to make and maintain nature's choice in us. But to the Karma Yogin, they are a survival, a stumbling block, a process of the ignorance, and as he progresses, they fall away from his nature. The child soul needs them for its growth, but they drop from an adult in the divine culture. In the God nature to which we have to rise, there can be an adamantine, even a destructive severity, but not hatred, a divine irony, but not scorn, a calm, clear-seeing, and forceful rejection, but not repulsion and dislike. Even what we have to destroy, we must not abhor or fail to recognize as a disguised and temporary movement of the eternal. And, since all things are the one self in its manifestation, we shall have equality of soul towards the ugly and the beautiful, the maimed and the perfect, the noble and the vulgar, the pleasant and the unpleasant, the good and the evil. Here also, there will be no hatred, scorn, and repulsion, but instead, the equal eye that sees all things in their real character and their appointed place. For we shall know that all things express or disguise, develop or distort, as best they can or with whatever defect they must, under the circumstances intended for them, in the way possible to the immediate status or function or evolution of their nature. Some truth or fact, some energy or potential of the divine necessary by its presence in the progressive manifestation, both to the whole of the present sum of things and for the perfection of the ultimate result. That truth is what we must seek and discover behind the transitory expression. Undeterred by appearances, by the deficiencies or the disfigurements of the expression, we can then worship the divine forever unsullied, pure, beautiful, and perfect behind his masks. All indeed has to be changed, not ugliness accepted, but divine beauty. Not imperfection taken as our resting place, but perfection striven after. The supreme good made the universal aim, and not evil. But what we do has to be done with a spiritual understanding and knowledge. And it is a divine good, beauty, perfection, pleasure that has to be followed after, not the human standards of these things. If we have not equality, it is a sign that we are still pursued by the ignorance. We shall truly understand nothing, and it is more likely that we shall destroy the old imperfection only to create another. For we are substituting the appreciations of our human mind and desire soul for the divine values. Equality does not mean a fresh ignorance or blindness. It does not call for and need not initiate a grayness of vision and a blotting out of all hues. Difference is there. Variation of expression is there. And this variation we shall appreciate far more justly than we could when the eye was clouded by a partial and erring love and hate, admiration and scorn, sympathy and antipathy, attraction and repulsion. But behind the variation, we shall always see the complete and immutable who dwells within it, and we shall feel, know, or at least, if it is hidden from us, trust in the wise purpose and divine necessity of the particular manifestation. Whether it appear to our human standards harmonious and perfect, or crude and unfinished, or even false and evil. And so, too, we shall have the same equality of mind and soul towards all happenings, painful or pleasurable, defeat and success, honor and disgrace, good repute and ill repute, good fortune and evil fortune. For in all happenings we shall see the will of the master of all works and results, and a step in the evolving expression of the divine. He manifests himself to those who have the inner eye that sees, in forces and their play and results, as well as in things and in creatures. All things move towards a divine event. Each experience, suffering and want, no less than joy and satisfaction, is a necessary link in the carrying out of a universal movement, which it is our business to understand and second. To revolt, to condemn, to cry out, is the impulse of our unchastened and ignorant instincts. Revolt, like everything else, has its uses in the play, and is even necessary, helpful, decreed for the divine development in its own time and stage. But the movement of an ignorant rebellion belongs to the stage of the soul's childhood, or to its raw adolescence. The ripened soul does not condemn, but seeks to understand and master, does not cry out, but accepts or toils to improve and perfect, does not revolt inwardly, but labors to obey and fulfill and transfigure. Therefore, we shall receive all things with an equal soul from the hands of the Master. Failure we shall admit as a passage, as calmly as success until the hour of the divine victory arrives. Our souls and minds and bodies will remain unshaken by acutest sorrow and suffering and pain if, in the divine dispensation, they come to us, unoverpowered by intensest joy and pleasure. Thus, supremely balanced, we shall continue steadily on our way, meeting all things with an equal calm until we are ready for a more exalted status and can enter into the supreme and universal Ananda.